This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The state legislature has been on summer break except for a few days since the end of June, but it has been a very busy summer for state government, including a bankruptcy filing for the city of Detroit, an ongoing debate over Medicaid expansion, and two school districts being dissolved because they are financially insolvent. We'll be discussing those issues and more with our guest today, Michigan's Governor Rick Snyder. Thank you very much for being here.
It's great to be with you.
I want to note at the top, we are recording on Thursday, July 25th, and I want to welcome Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer and Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette. Jennifer, first question for the governor.
Governor, let's talk about Detroit. The executive director of the New Economy Initiative was quoted in a Reuters article this week, and he said, "If Detroit doesn't become a talent magnet, Michigan doesn't stand a prayer." Do you think Detroit has the future of becoming a talent magnet, given the news in the last week? And how can we prevent what's happening to Detroit now from happening to the rest of the cities in the state?
Well, there's two or three pieces to that big question. With respect to the talent piece, though, in Detroit, one of the positives that's already going on is talent is flowing into Detroit already. And that's part of the message we need to get out to people. The issue is really with the city government and its lack of providing services and its debt burden. If you look at the city of Detroit, a lot of tremendously positive things are going on today. Young people are moving to Detroit. Occupancy is over 90% in Midtown and Downtown Detroit. Look at what Dan Gilbert's doing with real estate in Detroit in terms of the Madison building is full of startup companies. The Illich family is making huge investments. We're talking about a new arena for the Red Wings. M1, the new light transit system. The foundation committee has been big supporters. They're a big part of M1. They've done a Detroit City Future Plan. The list goes on of positive developments in Detroit over the last two or three years, with the major obstacle that's holding back even better growth being city government. In terms of problems that have been going on 60 years where the tough decisions weren't made. Essentially, the can was kicked down the road, and it was time to say enough is enough. Let's stop city government from going downhill. The citizens deserve better services than they're getting. Police protection, EMS, fire, all those things, streetlights being on. And so we're going to resolve that. What bankruptcy really allows us to do is to say, we're not going to go downhill anymore in the city of Detroit. It's time for stability, and it's time to grow the city based on a brighter future.
Alex.
On Face the Nation over the weekend, you made the comment that Detroit bankruptcy was 60 years in the making. Mm-hmm. On your estimation, when did Detroit pass that point of no return?
It's tough to say when you define that point because it's been going on for so many decades. The reason I go back 60 years is the high point in population was really about 1950. It was 1.85 million people. Almost 2 million people in the city of Detroit, and it had declined decade after decade. I think this problem could have been resolved in any one of those decades in terms of making some tough decisions to restructure how the city operates, to really get focused in on services to citizens, and to better manage the financial condition of the city. So there wouldn't be one date that you can say, you know, it was too late. This has been going on for decades. The part I'm proud to say of is we're not letting that continue. It's time to say enough is enough. Let's get a fresh start for Detroit, and let's grow the city.
Other cities have gone through bankruptcy. Detroit is the largest in the United States to ever go through bankruptcy. But have you taken a look at some other cities, and recognizing that Detroit's going to be a special case, is there a good model out there for how to do this right?
Detroit most likely will be that model. And again, you hope you never get to that circumstance because it is a last resort to go into bankruptcy. But Detroit should be that model, and that's what we've been working on and trying to work on that path. Because most of the other jurisdictions that went through this process, I would describe them more as free fall kind of situations, where they ignored the crisis up into the very last minute, and they sort of threw up their hands saying they had no clue what to do, sort of here's the keys to the city, good luck, leaving it to the bankruptcy judge to sort of sort through that. That's not what municipal bankruptcy is intended to do. And so if you look at it, this has been approached in a very thoughtful, deliberate fashion, again, trying to avoid bankruptcy, but also providing the foundation to do it in a smarter way. So one of the things is we have the best professionals in the country representing the city. Kevin Orr has the experience base to do it right. A lot of the work that was done with creditors already is relevant to continuing that discussion through the bankruptcy process. The third thing is that's important for, I think, a lot of citizens to realize, because this is a new phenomenon in terms of municipal bankruptcy, is the city gets to present its plan, not the creditors. In private bankruptcies, creditors present plans of how it should be reorganized. In this case, they don't have that ability. It's the city presenting a plan, and one of the priorities in municipal bankruptcy is the provision of services. That's a higher priority or as high a priority as repaying the debt. So here's an opportunity to say this isn't just about solving the debt question, but actually stabilizing and improving services in the city that the judge has to approve. So if you think about it, this is an opportunity to do it in a smarter, better fashion than having hundreds of creditors, you know, trying to do many different things.
The car companies, of course, went through bankruptcy in 2009, and now most people acknowledge they are doing quite well. Are there lessons to be learned from that, or is a municipal bankruptcy quite different from a private business going through bankruptcy?
Well, a couple things. The lessons to be learned is, one, doing it in an efficient, structured fashion is a big plus in terms of having good professionals on top of it, and the auto companies had that opportunity. The second one is to realize that once you go through this process, you can be successful. It doesn't mean life is over. It just simply means it was really a terrible event, a tragic event, how you ended up there to begin with. But now that's behind you, you can have an opportunity to be strong, flourish, and grow and do well. That's the intention here with Detroit, is let's get on the path to being a great city again.
Detroit filing for bankruptcy is obviously a huge step. Does taking that step make it any more likely that that would be considered for, say, Benton Harbor or some of the smaller cities in the state which are also in financial distress under an emergency financial manager?
Again, bankruptcy is a last resort, so it shouldn't be viewed as there's a new model to do municipal finance in. It's really, this is everything else has been tried. It doesn't work, but there is a tool reserve there. And again, each situation is unique. I mean, Detroit having $18 billion in liabilities is a terrible situation. And then if you go to the provision of services, the lack of services, 58-minute response times, 40% of the streetlights being out, EMS only having a third of their units available to make calls, those are unacceptable things that just need to be resolved. And the people of Detroit, the citizens there, deserve better services because they're struggling.
Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
You touched a little bit on the auto industry, Gordon. I want to ask you, Governor, you had said there's job creation and there's economic development going on to Detroit, and you know, many would agree that the auto industry is rebounding. But I'm wondering if and when Detroit is back on its feet, what role do you see the auto industry playing as far as contributing Detroit to being a thriving urban center, or is there a need to diversify what industries and strengths Detroit has economically?
Yeah, well, I think that diversification is going on in any case, but we want the auto companies to be strong. And we should be proud that we're the Motor City. That's something that we want to keep that title. It's a very good thing in terms of success. And we have been seeing strong job creation through the auto companies, that both the OEMs themselves, but the supply chain. A couple things that come out is Michigan was number one in manufacturing jobs being added of any state in the nation, over 80,000 in the last 2 or 3 years. And that's a good thing because they're not as well-paying as they used to be, but they're still relatively well-paying jobs. The other one that the auto industry really brings, in addition to the manufacturing jobs, though, is we're the research and development center, the engineering center for the entire industry. There's 200 to 300 R&D centers for automotive in Michigan. Those are tremendous jobs, and we want to stay the center of the industry in that way. So we shouldn't be pushing away the auto industry or manufacturing. We should be embracing it, while at the same time recognizing we've got some other great industry groups going. Agriculture is doing fabulous in Michigan. Tourism. Insurance and finance is something we don't talk about enough, but we've had a number of major expansions of insurance and finance companies in the state.
Alex Mitchell of MLive in the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Just to switch topics here for a moment, Southwest Michigan First presented the results of a Plant Moran study it commissioned last week to Kalamazoo County leaders. Coming out of the presentation, one of the major points was that local and county government's one of the most regulated industries in the state. There need to be new ways to raise revenues. There's an increasing gap between expenditures and revenues that the county and local governments are bringing in. In your estimation, what can be done to raise revenues with the regulations that county and local government face?
Well, that's a discussion we need to have. We kicked off a work group recently for the schools in terms of doing a better early warning system to look at their financial issues. But one of the things I think we should be also looking at, that we don't have things formally announced yet, but I've been talking to people, should we start some work group or task force to really look at municipal finance issues in our state? And not just short term, but to say, let's start looking at 5 and 10 year horizons to say, what are the challenges? What are the issues? To really understand what's kind of a cycle of an economy going up and down, because we are clearly down, we're coming back up. And also separating that from what's structural, to say, what's a structural problem that having the economy come back isn't going to solve? And so that's where we need to break it down in what's cyclical versus structural, and have an open discussion in the public, you know, setting about what these issues are.
Do you believe there's a opportunity with consolidation of local units, particularly public safety? Do you think that new revenue streams could be found through further consolidation?
Well, I think there's opportunities for improved services at a lower cost. And what I say is I don't push legal consolidation because that raises a whole nother set of questions. I encourage any jurisdiction to do that, but particularly as there's service consolidation issues. And not just within putting two parts of public safety together, but could surrounding jurisdictions share the same IT functions, finance functions? There's a lot of different work that could go on there to just be more efficient, because I don't think we're as efficient as we can be in the public sector. There's room for improvement. That we need to be more accountable for delivering results. And we've made tremendous progress at the state level over the last 2 or 3 years with our budgeting practices, our management practices. There's a number of jurisdictions that are well run, but we can keep getting better.
West of here, Saugatuck and Douglas will vote in November on whether or not to bring those two cities together, consolidate. Would you want to look at that and see if that's a model that other cities across the state may consider? And if so, can the state be a facilitator?
Yeah, we actually provide resources to help with some of the startup or the one-time cost of consolidation of either services or a jurisdiction like that. So we're happy to be a supporting resource, not ongoing dollars, but to help do the transitional part. I look forward to watching that vote and hopefully seeing a consolidation because it's an opportunity to show how this model can be successful. We haven't done very many of them in the state. I mean, I'm an old Battle Creek boy. I grew up in Battle Creek Township on North 22nd Street.
And Battle Creek Township doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore. It was merged in the city, and that was only really because Kellogg's pushed the issue. Battle Creek was in serious trouble, and Battle Creek's a stronger, better place because Battle Creek Township and the city of Battle Creek merged together.
Going back to that presentation that Alex alluded to by Southwest Michigan First, quoting from the MLive Kalamazoo story, Portage Mayor Pete Strazda said, "The fiscal cliff is approaching for all of us. It's just not sustainable, though, no matter how good of a government you are." And Portage, for many years, has boasted of being a very efficient government, good services for low taxes. If a place like Portage is concerned about a fiscal cliff coming, should every local government in the state be thinking about it? Are there things out there like legacy costs that are going to catch up to them?
It sort of begs a question. It should always been a question. I mean, why is it only a question now? Shouldn't people have always thought about looking at the long-term consequences of their actions? So part of this is people are waking up to issues that I think should have been on the table for a very long time. When people looked at pensions, they looked at post-retiree medical costs, those should have been analyzed much more efficiently, and they should have been looking at funding patterns rather than leaving them unfunded. And I'll look at the state of Michigan as an illustration. We weren't paying in our pension plans as much as we should have in a number of cases in a number of those prior years. We weren't putting aside dollars for post-retiree medical costs. We weren't reforming our post-retiree medical costs. We've done that in the last 2 or 3 years. So again, that was a case of people not making the tough decisions over the last 10, 20, 30, pick how many ever years, that finally we're getting on top of these issues. And at the state, I'm very proud of our track record of taking on these issues, of being more accountable, of being more transparent, saying we're going to fund these things appropriately because I want to make sure those resources are available. In fact, I have our budget team models out to 2040. In terms of looking at costs. And people sort of laugh about it because they always think of it, it shouldn't be about how long I'm in office. Shouldn't I be responsible enough to say I'm thinking about the future and we should be modeling that far out? Every jurisdiction should be doing this.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Governor Rick Snyder, who's in Kalamazoo today. We are recording on Thursday, July 25th. Also here, Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman and Alex Mitchell of MLive in the Kalamazoo Gazette. Jennifer, next question for the governor.
There are a few things that get Michiganders more riled up than potholes, as funny as it sounds. But in Calhoun County, we recently approved a partnership with Jackson County to share some road administration and management. And that was following both counties voting to disband their road commission. Do you see that as an ideal strategy to address road conditions in local municipalities? And what else do you think needs to be done to get these roads fixed?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd congratulate Calhoun and Jackson counties for those moves. Again, that was very much in line with our earlier discussion about consolidation of services. And that's a great illustration of people working well together for a better outcome. What I would say is that helps, but we do need more revenue for our roads. I mean, if you step back and look at, we're fundamentally not investing enough in our roads. And I don't know anybody that likes our roads or have liked them for a very long time. We need $1 billion plus per year in additional revenue if we really want to keep our roads up. And that's not to make them the world's best. That's simply to say, let's stop them from going downhill. And the way I view it is that's a tough thing to say. People don't want to hear about the need for government needing new revenue. But the way I describe it is it's much like saying, do you change the oil in your car or do you wait for an engine rebuild? This is like an oil change. And we're not even doing an oil change appropriately. So we're looking at a gigantic bill if we don't figure out some way to invest more in our roads. I'm proud we've made some progress in the last budget, but it wasn't enough. What we'd do if we put more money in our roads, we would save a huge bill that would otherwise come later. We would create lots of jobs in terms of construction jobs, but also economic engines in terms of more commerce, better commerce. And we'd save about 100 lives a year if we made this investment. And you can't put a price on that. So this is an ongoing dialogue. Right now, I'm fairly busy with Healthy Michigan and with the Detroit bankruptcy, but I hope we can get back to having that dialogue about roads and people having a chance to chime in on, do you like them or not? And if you don't like them, how can we invest more?
Alex Mitchell. Medicaid expansion has been something you've been working on for some time, and you expressed your displeasure that the Senate went on summer break without getting the vote done on that. A reform Medicaid expansion proposal was revealed by a Senate work group. What were your thoughts on that, and what's it going to take to get the expansion done?
Healthy Michigan is really important for Michiganders, in my view, at two levels. One, it's about fundamentally just helping people. There are a lot of hardworking, lower-income people that don't have health insurance, and that's a terrible answer because they end up going to the emergency room. Emergency room people are fabulous, but it's a very expensive option compared to getting preventative care. And usually it's a much more serious issue than if they would have gotten preventative care. We should do something about that. The other one is just the cost side of it, in addition to the human side. It would save us money, because that uncompensated, unmanaged care costs us a lot of money. It's not through the government paying for it, but through your insurance premiums. So think about the cost of going to an ER visit versus a physician visit. If you could move from one to the other, wouldn't society save a bunch of money? I appreciate the Senate now being much more proactive on this issue, and I think it was good they had their work group report come out. I'm looking forward to the committee hearings next week. I hope we can get a resolution by the end of August because it's really important. This is about a great answer for Michiganders. I don't see any good reason not to do this.
The group Americans for Prosperity, their Michigan arm, has argued that in other states where they've expanded Medicaid, they have not had the results that you've talked about. The costs have gone up. The number of people getting preventative care, those sort of things, has not been as great as they would have hoped. What makes you think that you can do it better in Michigan if, in fact, these other states haven't met the standard?
A couple things. Most of the states are still implementing this thing. It really starts next year. So to say you're basing it all on something that may not even been implemented is kind of premature.
Yeah, Americans for Prosperity, they were saying there's a couple states that did this even before Obama was elected.
But I mean, the
other
part is this is just not generic Medicaid expansion. I didn't support that. This is Healthy Michigan. And I really want to compliment the House for working well with us in terms of making a stronger bill. I think the Senate's adopting a number of these items, plus coming up with some new ideas. And what I mean by Healthy Michigan, a couple aspects I really like that I think are critical, a health and wellness component. So part of this for the people that would be in this program, there'll be some premium requirement and some copay for non-preventative care that they can actually bring down that premium cost if they get a physical, if they have a health care plan with their doctor, if they meet certain objectives for their own health care, because that's better for them and that saves us money. So it's just not about generically saying, here's more services. It's about actually engaging people and taking better care of themselves, which I'm a huge advocate of, is wellness.
Is there a drop-dead date for having this done, to get it through the legislature and to you for a signature?
Well, that's where I really look at the end of August. We're getting really late then. There's no legal requirement but to implement this by January 1. Because every day that goes on beyond January 1, the situation's only going to get worse in terms of uncompensated care problems, in terms of challenges for the healthcare world, in terms of making it difficult for employers and small business to figure out what programs they should have. So this is something that we should move forward with.
Jennifer Bowman.
Some critics, including Mark Schauer, who's announced that he's running for governor, they say you campaign as a moderate Republican. And for the most part, they argue, now that you've been elected, you've worked more to please the right wing. Do you think that's a justified statement?
No, I work to serve the citizens of the state of Michigan. They're my customer. So I don't think about politics. And I've had multiple cases, and you can go look at the record, where people on the left may be really mad at me and people on the far right may be really mad at me. But basically, I'm here to say what I think is in the best interest of Michiganders, and it's focused on more and better jobs and a future for our kids. And a lot of these are tough decisions that had been put off for how many decades? So I'm proud to say we're making government more accountable, more efficient, giving better services to citizens. There are still too many struggling people out there, though. That's why I'm excited to keep on working hard to get Michigan on that path to being a great state. We're on the path. I want to get to the outcome.
Alex Mitchell.
To stick with some comments from Mr. Schauer for a moment, he said that you've essentially turned your back on state education, which he feels is one of his major components. What do you have to say to him criticizing your cuts to higher education and public education as a whole?
Well, first of all, with respect to K-12, there's been no cuts. So that's a false statement to begin with.
Wasn't there a cut your first year?
Not with respect to state dollars for education. What there was the TARP money that went on from the federal government. That was never intended to be long-time dollars. That was federal government dollars. People should go back and look at the record. That was only there for 2 or 3 years, and that did go away. But with respect to state dollars for K-12 education, we've increased by $632 since I've been governor. Each and every year, we put more dollars into education. So we've been investing in education. If you look at history, the last true cuts of state dollars to education were back in 2008 and 9. There were true cuts back then that were disguised by those federal dollars. If you look at other things, early childhood, we're making a massive investment in early childhood. We're almost doubling the resources going in early childhood. We're making the waiting list go away over the next 2 years. We made a $65 million investment this year in budget. I've already outlined $65 million for next year. That investment previously was not being made by anybody. So I'm the one leading the charge to step up for early childhood in our state. So if you look at it, there's a very strong track record of investing in education. I'd still like to find ways to do more. But what I would say is it shouldn't be about the money as much as we need to do a better job of student growth. Too often when people bring up these comments and they make the comments, watch, they just talk about the money. I like to talk about the kids. Every discussion should start with the kids and work off of that rather than people just talking about money.
Since we got into a little bit there on politics, you brought up that the citizens of the state are your customers. Mm-hmm. There are many political prognosticators out there saying that your approval rating is one that does not portend good things for a re-election bid. When you look at those things, I know that you say you got to make decisions and you don't look at polls, but if they're your customers, don't the polls perhaps tell you that the customers are not satisfied with the job you're doing?
Well, I think there's a poll that just came out that showed those numbers had just reversed. That's something that changes over time and pattern as various events go on. But if you step back and look at it, it takes some time for quite often the public to look at some of these tough decisions and see how they do add value. Again, we've taken on probably more tough issues in the last 2 or 3 years than had been taken on how many decades in Michigan? Because we were a broken state. When you ask people for fundamental change to reinvent a state, those are not easy things, and quite often it takes people some time to step back and look to say, hey, this is a really good thing. And that's the process we're going through, and we're showing tremendous results. If you step back and look, since the low point of the unemployment, back to August 2009, we've added over 250,000 private sector jobs. Personal incomes have been coming up again in Michigan after going down for years and years in terms of lower income levels for people and their families. They're coming back up again. Population is increasing again in Michigan. There's so many good things going on. But again, people are still struggling, so I don't want to stop. We need to continue this path, and a lot of it is by having government play its appropriate role. We balanced the budget 3 years in a row. We're paying down our long-term debt now. We've got a much better tax structure. Our regulatory environment's better. We're giving better customer service to our citizens. These are exciting things. We're investing more in education.
I want to stick with education and kind of bring it around back to something else. We talked about consolidation earlier. Here in this part of the state, Albion Public Schools have closed their high school. They're going to merge with Marshall. Mm-hmm. Also, this week, a couple of school districts were shut down, basically, because they're insolvent, Buena Vista and Inkster. Detroit Free Press editorial on closing the schools says that these school districts don't necessarily need to continue operating. They just don't like the way it's being done. We need fewer school districts, without question. We need less administration and overhead and more money going to classrooms and the teachers who make them effective places of learning. But achieving that end needs to be done systematically with important eyes toward the impact on kids and families and the careful guidance of a comprehensive plan. Do you think there should be more of a comprehensive plan if we're going to be consolidating school districts?
And that's already taking place. We've launched a work group now that's very broad-based, that's holding public meetings to talk about the process, to look at some of the better metrics and measures to identify school districts in trouble. Just use Buena Vista as an illustration. That was a mismanagement case. The district themselves, the school board, the superintendent, the people involved in that didn't manage the district well. So the consequence is there's a crisis. I want to start getting on top of it, but that responsibility really was with the local school board not doing their job right and the local people. So this is a case where let's create a better review system so we can help identify those problems and help local people be more successful and support them better.
Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer, another question for Governor Snyder.
We had talked a little bit about how jobs are coming in into Michigan, and we're pushing to have kids in school. And Michigan's not unique with this issue, but you know there's growing income inequality in the U.S. And you had talked about how we're bringing in quality jobs, but can you talk a little bit about what plans or what can the state do to make sure that we're closing in on that gap?
Yeah, well, one of the things we're doing, and we launched this program called Community Ventures. We launched a program in the last budget year to focus on the structurally unemployed. And the goal is, to start with, is to get 1,000 people employed that traditionally weren't in the workforce. And that program's going very well. It's focused in some of our most difficult urban areas. And we're working with employers. We're spending time understanding the constraints of why they haven't been able to hold a job. And it's interesting. One thing we've learned, one of the biggest constraints is the lack of transportation to be able to get to work. So that's something that we're diving in on, we're working hard on, and as we learn things, that will give us a better set of real-life things to go solve at the next level to continue on that path. So we're very much focused on that with that particular program. Another illustration I'll give you is we've got a big initiative going in skilled trades. There's a great opportunity for people to have well-paying, very honorable jobs that we sort of ignored as our society. We sort of push people too much to go to college, and we need to push people to go to college. But we should equally push people to look at skilled trades in terms of not telling them they have to go there, but giving them good information, letting them understand that there are job openings there. There are thousands of skilled trades openings in the state of Michigan, and that number is only going to grow unless we do more. So one of the focus points we have is to how to help kids and parents or people looking for that new career look at skilled trades is a great opportunity.
Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Environmental issues have been a hot topic in Kalamazoo County for the past decade plus, with the contamination of the former Allied paper site landfill and now the Enbridge oil spill in the Kalamazoo River. With Enbridge doing further cleanup efforts currently and them having some pushback from local Comstock Township officials, what in your estimation can your office do to help, I guess, local governments have a better relationship with the EPA?
Yeah, we try to be a party to help facilitate those discussions, but some of those are difficult. For example, the Enbridge situation is pretty much all the EPA. We don't have any real authority or say in it, but we try to help convene people. If people have issues, how can we help make sure they get to the right people in the EPA? How do we help facilitate the discussion? But that is a challenge point. And one of the things, though, I'd say outside of just those couple things you mentioned that we were working on is we just passed some legislation to hopefully allow the Michigan DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, to keep the wetlands program, because that was a case we don't believe should go to the EPA. We think we can do a better job with Michiganders running our programs here, and we had to make some changes to make sure we were staying in compliance with federal law. We were able to get those done, and hopefully we can have, in at least some of those areas, more Michiganders giving great service to people right here in our state.
Okay, we're down here to just a couple minutes left. When we reached this point with Mark Schauer last week, I asked him about
It's not the same thing. I'm not a candidate for governor. I'm the governor.
That's true. But anyway, I asked him about some discontent with people on the left who might want another Democratic candidate for governor. There's some people who would like another Republican candidate for governor or perhaps lieutenant governor. What do you say to these Tea Party leaders, including Gene Clem from Kalamazoo, who's, you know, worked more with the Republican Party than a lot of people in the Tea Party, who have said that they don't plan to support your reelection? They may vote for you, but they're not going to go the extra mile.
That's democracy.
And you're fine with it?
Well, again, that's part of our democratic process. We still don't know who could be all the candidates in either party. And we're a long way from a primary and a long way from an election. And the way I view it is we've got a system that works. The main thing is I think we have room for improvement on how people treat one another during elections and go through those issues. I think people are far too negative. I think people should stay focused on what they're going to offer that's a positive, instead of just spending all their time trying to beat up somebody else. And I'm speaking nationally. And very much that's my philosophy, and hopefully people know that. I believe in relentless positive action. I don't blame anyone. I don't take credit. I'm just here to solve a problem and give the best service I can to 10 million wonderful people.
Okay, one last question. As you noted, you are not a candidate for governor. You are governor. You have not formally launched a reelection campaign. Do you care to make Kalamazoo the place where you make some big news one way or another on that one?
Well, I appreciate you asking the question. As a practicum mayor, no, I'm honored being governor, and there are many more things I'd like to do, but I'm not announcing I'm a candidate at this point in time. I'm staying focused on so many important issues. Healthy Michigan, the bankruptcy of Detroit, education. There are a lot of great things we have going that are really going to make a tremendous difference, not just for now, but for the long term, for the kids.
Governor Snyder, thank you very much for your time.
It's great to be with you. Thank you.
That's Governor Snyder speaking on Thursday, July 25th. He recorded while he was here in Kalamazoo. We thank him for being here, and we thank Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer and Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.